farther than half a mile, for earth and rock had fallen at both ends. But we gathered all the things we found, and we brought them to our workplace. We found strange boxes with bars of metal inside, with many cords and strands and coils of metal. We found wires that led to strange little globes of glass on the walls. They contained threads of metal thinner than a spider's web. These things help us in our work. We do not understand them, but we think that the men of the unmentionable times had known our power of the sky, and these things had some relation to it. We do not know, but we shall learn. We cannot stop now, even though it frightens us that we are alone in our knowledge. No single one can possess greater wisdom than the many scholars who are elected by all men for their wisdom. Yet we can. We do. We have fought against saying it, but now it is said. We do not care. We forget all men, all laws, and all things save our metals and our wires. So much is still to be learned. So long a road lies before us, and what care we if we must travel it alone? Chapter 4. Many days passed before we could speak to the Golden One again. But then came the day when the sky turned white, as if the sun had burst and spread its flame in the air, and the fields lay still, without breath, and the dust of the road was white in the glow. So the women of the field were weary, and they tarried over their work, and they were far from the road when we came. But the Golden One stood alone at the hedge, waiting. We stopped, and we saw that their eyes, so hard and scornful to the world, were looking at us, as if they would obey any word we might speak. And then we said, "We have given you a name in our thoughts, Liberty 5-3000.
"What is our name?"
they asked. "The Golden One."
"Nor do we call you Equality 7-2521 when we think of you."
"What name have you given us?"
They looked straight into our eyes, and they held their head high, and they answered, "The Unconquered."
For a long time we could not speak. Then we said, "Such thoughts as these are forbidden, Golden One."
"But you think such thoughts as these, and you wish us to think them."
We looked into their eyes, and we could not lie. "Yes," we whispered, and they smiled. And then we said, "Our dearest one, do not obey us." They stepped back, and their eyes were wide and still.
"Speak those words again,"
they whispered.
"Which words?"
we asked. But they did not answer, and we knew it. "Our dearest one," we whispered. Never have men said this to women. The head of the Golden One bowed slowly, and they stood still before us, their arms at their sides, the palms of their hands turned to us, as if their body were delivered in submission to our eyes, and we could not speak. Then they raised their head, and they spoke simply and gently, as if they wished us to forget some anxiety of their own.
"The day is hot,"
they said,
"and you have worked for many hours, and you must be weary."
"No," we answered.
"It is cooler in the fields," they said, "and there is water to drink. Are you thirsty?"
"Yes," we answered, "but we cannot cross the hedge."
"We shall bring the water to you," they said.
Then they knelt by the moat. They gathered water in their two hands, and they rose and held the water out to our lips. We do not know if we drank that water. We only knew suddenly that their hands were empty, but we were still holding our lips to their hands, and that they knew it, but did not move. We raised our head and stepped back, for we did not understand what had made us do this, and we were afraid to understand it. And the Golden One stepped back and stood, looking upon our hands in wonder. Then the Golden One moved away, even though no others were coming, and they moved, stepping back, as if they could not turn from us, their arms bent before them, as if they could not lower their hands. Chapter 5. We made it. We created it. We brought it forth from the night of ages, we alone, our hands, our mind, ours alone and only. We do not know what we are saying. Our head is reeling. We look upon the light which we have made. We shall be forgiven for anything we say tonight. Tonight, after more days and trials than we can count, we finished building a strange thing from the remains of the unmentionable times. A box of glass, devised to give forth the power of the sky of greater strength than we had ever achieved before. And when we put our wires to this box, when we closed the current, the wire glowed. It came to life, it turned red, and a circle of light lay on the stone before us. We stood, and we held our head in our hands. We could not conceive of that which we had created. We had touched no flint, made no fire, yet here was light. Light that came from nowhere, light from the heart of metal. We blew out the candle. Darkness swallowed us. There was nothing left around us, nothing, save night and a thin thread of flame in it, as a crack in the wall of a prison. We stretched our hands to the wire, and we saw our fingers in the red glow. We could not see our body nor feel it, and in that moment nothing existed save our two hands over a wire glowing in a black abyss. Then we thought of the meaning of that which lay before us. We can light our tunnel, and the city, and all the cities of the world, with nothing save metal and wires. We can give our brothers a new light, cleaner and brighter than any they have ever known. The power of the sky can be made to do men's bidding. There are no limits to its secrets and its might, and it can be made to grant us anything if we but choose to ask. Then we knew what we must do. Our discovery is too great for us to waste our time in sweeping the streets. We must not keep our secret to ourselves, nor buried under the ground. We must bring it into the sight of all men. We need all our time. We need the workrooms of the Home of the Scholars. We want the help of our brother scholars and their wisdom joined to ours. There is so much work ahead for all of us, for all the scholars of the world. In a month, the World Council of Scholars is to meet in our city. It is a great council, to which the wisest of all lands are elected, and it meets once a year in the different cities of the earth. We shall go to this council, and we shall lay before them as our gift this glass box with the power of the sky. We shall confess everything to them. They will see, understand, and forgive. For our gift is greater than our transgression. They will explain it to the Council of Vocations, and we shall be assigned to the Home of the Scholars. This has never been done before, but neither has such a gift as ours ever been offered to men. We must wait. We must guard our tunnel as we had never guarded it before. For should any man save the scholars learn of our secret, they would not understand it, nor would they believe us. They would see nothing save our crime of working alone, and they would destroy us and our light.
We care not about our body, but our light is... Yes, we do care. For the first time, we do care about our body. For this wire is a part of our body, is a vein torn from us, glowing with our blood. Are we proud of this thread of metal, or of our hands which made it? Or is there a line to divide these two? We stretch out our arms. For the first time do we know how strong our arms are. And a strange thought comes to us. We wonder, for the first time in our life, what we look like. Men never see their own faces and never ask their brothers about it, for it is evil to have concern for their own faces or bodies. But tonight, for a reason we cannot fathom, we wish it were possible to us to know the likeness of our own person. Chapter 6. We have not written for 30 days. For 30 days we have not been here in our tunnel. We had been caught. It happened on that night when we wrote last. We forgot that night to watch the sand in the glass, which tells us when 3 hours have passed and it is time to return to the city theater. When we remembered it, the sand had run out. We hastened to the theater, but the big tent stood gray and silent against the sky. The streets of the city lay before us, dark and empty. If we went back to hide in our tunnel, we would be found, and our light found with us. So we walked to the home of the street sweepers. When the council of the home questioned us, we looked upon the faces of the council, but there was no curiosity in those faces, and no anger, and no mercy. So when the oldest of them asked us,
"Where have you been?"
we thought of our glass box and of our light, and we forgot all else. And we answered, "We will not tell you." The oldest did not question us further. They turned to the two youngest and said, and their voice was bored,
"Take our brother, Equality 7-2521, to the Palace of Corrective Detention. Lash them until they tell."
So we were taken to the stone room under the Palace of Corrective Detention. This room has no windows, and it is empty save for an iron post. Two men stood by the post, naked but for leather aprons and leather hoods over their faces. Those who had brought us departed, leaving us to the two judges who stood in a corner of the room. The judges were small, thin men, gray and bent. They gave the signal to the two strong hooded ones. They tore our clothes from our body. They threw us down upon our knees, and they tied our hands to the iron post. The first blow of the lash felt as if our spine had been cut in two. The second blow stopped the first, and for a second we felt nothing. Then the pain struck us in our throat, and fire ran in our lungs without air. But we did not cry out. The lash whistled like a singing wind. We tried to count the blows, but we lost count. We knew that the blows were falling upon our back, only we felt nothing upon our back any longer. A flaming grill kept dancing before our eyes, and we thought of nothing save that grill, a grill of red squares. And then we knew that we were looking at the squares of the iron grill in the door, and that there were also the squares of stone on the walls and the squares which the lash was cutting upon our back, crossing and recrossing itself in our flesh. Then we saw a fist before us. It knocked our chin up, and we saw the red froth of our mouth on the withered fingers, and the judge asked,
"Where have you been?"
But we jerked our head away, hid our face upon our tied hands, and bit our lips. The lash whistled again. We wondered who was sprinkling burning coal dust upon the floor, for we saw drops of red, twinkling on the stones around us.
Then we knew nothing, save two voices snarling steadily, one after the other, even though we knew they were speaking many minutes apart.
Where have you been? 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 Where have you been?
And our lips moved, but the sound trickled back into our throat, and the sound was only...
The light. The light. The light.
Then we knew nothing. We opened our eyes, lying on our stomach on the brick floor of a cell. We looked upon two hands lying far before us on the bricks, and we moved them, and we knew that they were our hands, but we could not move our body. Then we smiled, for we thought of the light, and that we had not betrayed it. We lay in our cell for many days. The door opened twice each day, once for the men who brought us bread and water, and once for the judges. Many judges came to our cell, first the humblest, and then the most honored judges of the city. They stood before us in their white togas, and they asked,
"Are you ready to speak?"
But we shook our head, lying before them on the floor, and they departed. We counted each day and each night as it passed. Then, tonight, we knew that we must escape, for tomorrow the World Council of Scholars is to meet in our city. It was easy to escape from the Palace of Corrective Detention. The locks are old on the doors, and there are no guards about. There is no reason to have guards, for men have never defied the councils so far as to escape from whatever place they were ordered to be. Our body is healthy, and strength returns to it speedily. We lunged against the door, and it gave way. We stole through the dark passages and through the dark streets, and down into our tunnel. We lit a candle, and we saw that our place had not been found, and nothing had been touched. And our glass box stood before us on the cold oven as we had left it. What matter they now, the scars upon our back? Tomorrow, in the full light of day, we shall take our box and leave our tunnel open and walk through the streets to the home of the scholars. We shall put before them the greatest gift ever offered to men. We shall tell them the truth. We shall hand to them, as our confession, these pages we have written. We shall join our hands to theirs, and we shall work together with the power of the sky for the glory of mankind. Our blessing upon you, our brothers. Tomorrow you will take us back into your fold, and we shall be an outcast no longer. Tomorrow we shall be one of you again. Tomorrow.
Chapter 7. It is dark here in the forest. The leaves rustle over our head, black against the last gold of the sky. The moss is soft and warm. We shall sleep on this moss for many nights, till the beasts of the forest come to tear our body. We have no bed now, save the moss, and no future, save the beasts. We are old now, yet we were young this morning, when we carried our glass box through the streets of the city to the home of the scholars. No men stopped us, for there were none about from the Palace of Corrective Detention, and the others knew nothing. No men stopped us at the gate. We walked through the empty passages and into the great hall, where the World Council of Scholars sat in solemn meeting. We saw nothing as we entered, save the sky in the great windows, blue and glowing. Then we saw the scholars, who sat around a long table. They were as shapeless clouds, huddled at the rise of the great sky. There were the men whose famous names we knew, and others from distant lands whose names we had not heard. We saw a great